MacCast, Monday, June 4th, 2018. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, guess what? Today, as I sit here recording this show, was the kickoff of Worldwide Developer Conference for Apple. WWDC 2018 kicked off in San Jose, and of course, they broadcast the keynote. I was following along, actually hanging out in the MacCast Patreon with a number of the Patreon supporters, which was a lot of fun. That was a new thing we got to do. And I'll tell you more about how you can become a Patreon supporter later in the show. But we were hanging out, listening to Apple, all of Apple's announcements. And of course, in this episode, that means we're going to dive into all of the things that Apple showed off for us. And there is a lot. There's a lot to get through. So we'll see how this show goes in terms of length. But I'm looking forward to jumping in and talking to you about all of the great announcements and just giving you my reactions and thoughts on what Apple let us know about today. So we're going to get into that in a second. But before we get started, I want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Ulysses. You know, Ulysses is an awesome writing application for your Mac, your iPad, and iPhone. If you are a Markdown user, I think it is a must-have application. I am a big convert to Markdown. I've been using it for a lot of my work and notes and things like that, both here on the MacCast and also for my development work. I'm actually going to be giving a talk about it at this year's Mac Stock. So if you're going to make it out there, check that out. But I think Ulysses is the perfect tool for writing and managing your Markdown. I love it because it allows me to write very, very quickly, and it just looks gorgeous. It displays all of the markup in style. Plus, they have templates that I can easily add from their library. They also offer me filters and groups so I can organize my projects by task or project. I have to-dos, I have presentations, I have documentation, and I want all of that stuff separated. And in addition, I can easily add keywords to my various documents to make searching and filtering and finding those things fast and easy. And Ulysses just shipped out a new version with some awesome new updates and enhancements. One of the ones I am particularly excited about being a developer is revamped code blocks. And this is great not only for developers, but also technical writers, anybody who needs to display or share code. They are compatible with GitHub flavored Markdown, the fenced code blocks, and they added support, and this is really, really cool, for syntax highlighting for over 40 programming languages. So you can get your syntax highlighting right inside your documents inside Ulysses. And they support that both inside the editor and inside the export features. So that is really cool. Another great enhancement in the new version for writers is the ability to set daily writing goals based on characters or words. So you get a little circular symbol to help you visualize your progress, and it resets every day. So you can see how far you've gotten each day, what your progress is, and you can monitor that progress over time and even export that data to a CSV file. So that's going to be a really great motivator for writers who have daily goals and things like that. You also have the ability to set goals and desire, you know, for desired article length or reading time of text. That's been in there for a while. You can track your progress on that, but now you can also set a deadline for that. So that means Ulysses is going to actually calculate the number of words that you need to write per day in order to reach your goal, so you can monitor and follow along for that. And finally, they added the ability to add custom colors to your keyword tags, so that makes them much easier to spot inside the library. So for example, I have a to-do keyword that I use for my to-dos, and I can now set the color of that to red and make it stand out, so I can quickly, just scanning through my library, find all of my to-do notes. And all of these enhancements and updates are in addition to all the great features that are already built into Ulysses, like iCloud syncing, organizational tools like nested groups, and the distraction-free writing environment. All of this stuff that makes Ulysses one of the best apps for writers. Now, a monthly subscription to Ulysses is just $4.99 per month. A yearly subscription will cost you just $39.99, and they do offer discounts for students, $10.99 for a six-month subscription. And they're giving MacCast listeners a special offer. Because you listen to this podcast, Ulysses is going to give you for free a three-month trial period. So just go to ulyssesapp.com/MacCast, and you're going to get a free three-month trial. That's ulyssesapp.com/MacCast for that free trial. You can also download the app for free on the App Store or the Mac App Store. And with that, you get a free 14-day trial. But be sure to use that special URL to get your three-month free trial. And if you are a Set App user, guess what? You already have access to Ulysses. So no reason not to grab it, download it, and start using it today. If you'd like more information about Ulysses, check out the website, ulyssesapp.com/MacCast. And please be sure to use that link to download your trial or check out the app so that they know you came from the MacCast and you appreciate them supporting the show. I certainly appreciate Ulysses for supporting the MacCast, and give them a big thank you for doing so. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we have a lot of things to cover with the Worldwide Developer Conference announcements, so let's just get right into it, starting off with the intro. I have to tell you, I think the intro to this year's Worldwide Developer Conference, they're always entertaining, but I think this year's video was one of the best that I've seen in years. They kind of did this developer nature mockumentary, kind of poking fun a little bit at themselves and developers. It had a great voiceover by Stephen Fry. It was perfect in almost every way and really hilarious. So at the very least, if you don't want to watch the entire Worldwide Developer Conference keynote, and it is available on Apple's Keynote app on Apple TV, or you can get the Worldwide Developer Conference app, or you can view it on Apple's website, I encourage you to at the very least check out the intro video. I think they also have it up on Apple's YouTube channel if you want to check that out. It really is quite hilarious. So check that out. And then they covered a little bit of numbers. Tim Cook came out. He talked about the fact that Apple now has 20 million app developers worldwide, and there were about 6,000 at the event. I think one of the larger Worldwide Developer Conferences they've had in the last couple years. Talked about the App Store. It's going to turn 10 next month. Can you believe we've had the App Store for 10 years? Doesn't feel like it's been that long, but it has, yeah, and time flies. And he said they now get about 500 million weekly visits to the App Store, so lots of folks buying apps. And I think the biggest number and one of the most impressive ones they threw out was that Apple will soon have paid out over $100 billion to app developers. So, you know, Apple is paying a lot of developers through the App Store, regardless of what you want to think or say about the developer ecosystem and the app ecosystem. That's still a lot of money over the past 10 years. And so there are people making money on the App Store one way or another, and definitely Apple is writing those checks. But then he kind of closed things out saying the event was going to be all about the software. So that was something I was sort of expecting. I alluded to the fact that I didn't really think Apple was going to be doing any hardware announcements, despite some of the rumors we had leading up. I know many of you were hoping maybe for some MacBook Pro updates. Those are not ready yet. My thought process behind that is because Intel just doesn't have the chips available yet that Apple would want to put in the MacBook Pro. Basically, Apple's waiting on the chips that are going to support the low-power DDR4 RAM so they can get past that 16 gigabyte RAM limit. Now, I know they can do that with the non-low power DDR4 and some Intel chips, but I think they, you know, for power requirements on the MacBook Pros, you don't want to give up battery life just to get RAM. Well, I think some people would, but, you know, Apple's holding out for those Intel processors. So that's why we didn't get that announcement, in my opinion. The other thing many of you wanted to hear about in terms of a hardware update, and this came out in the Slack conversation, and I was a little surprised by this, but a number of people looking for AirPod updates. Mostly, I think, battery life improvements was when I asked about that, because I was curious what Apple could do to improve the AirPods. I love mine, and I think they're almost a perfect product. Of course, better battery life is always a welcome thing. I guess standard wireless charging case, Apple hasn't made that available yet, so maybe that could be in the update. But I don't think there's a lot of things that you could tweak there. And then also, some of you had hoped for maybe a little update on the Mac Pro. Being a developer conference, and that's more in the pro user space, just getting some information about what Apple is planning for that new modular Mac Pro update. But they had already announced that that update was not coming out this year, that it was going to be coming out sometime in 2019. So I think Apple's just not ready to talk about that one quite yet. So we didn't get any real hardware announcements at this, but it was totally fine because they had a ton of software stuff to talk about. As a matter of fact, this was one of the longer keynotes I remember in recent memory. It went, well, a little over 2 hours, 2 hours and maybe 15 or 20 minutes. I wasn't really watching the clock too closely, other than to note that it started at 10 a.m. and it wasn't till afternoon that we were wrapping things up. So quite impressive, and probably the largest portion was taken up by the first set of announcements, which was iOS. And as Craig Federighi pointed out, it's no surprise that iOS, the next version, is called iOS 12, moving up from 11. And those of you with older devices are probably going to be happy to hear that the focus, the primary focus of iOS 12, is going to be performance, but not just for, you know, the fancy shiny new iPhone X. They are focusing, they said, especially on the older models. So iOS 12 is actually going to support all of the devices that were supported in iOS 11. So if you're running iOS 11 now and your device supports it, you'll be able to run iOS 12. So that means phones going all the way back to the iPhone 5S and iPhone SE, iPads going all the way back to the iPad Air 5th generation, iPad Mini 2, and even if you have an iPod Touch, a 6th generation iPod Touch, you're going to be able to run iOS 12. Now, as far as performance on older devices go, Federighi talked about some tests that they had been running, and again, think about this. This is early beta, so these might even get better, but tests they had been running on the iPhone 6 Plus, and they noted that app launches are 40% faster on iOS 12. It's about 50% faster to bring up the keyboard and 70% faster to swipe to access the camera. So those are some pretty significant speed boosts in a new operating system, an updated operating system, on older devices. And he also was key to point out that Apple really focused on improving performance when the device was under heavy load. So under heavy load tests, they found that you could access the share sheet about 2 times faster and also launch apps 2 times faster. And the reason they're able to do that is they tweaked things. And instead of ramping up the CPU clock speeds slowly as your iPhone is demanding more performance, they ramp it up instantaneously and then start to wind it back down as you don't need those extra processing cycles. So, and they do that, of course, to save battery and keep battery performance up. So you should, in iOS 12, notice quite a little speed kick when you update. And again, I think Apple's going to continue to improve on this through the beta period. So that was exciting to hear. They then moved on to augmented reality and announced ARKit 2. And the big announcement there was a new file format for augmented reality files. It's actually turns out to be a little bit older file format that's been tweaked a little bit for Apple. The file format is called USDZ, and it was created in conjunction with Pixar, and it's specifically optimized for AR sharing. And I'll get into what that's all about in a little bit when we start to talk about the demo. But it is available for use across iOS in all the different kinds of applications. Federighi kind of equated it to augmented reality Quick Look. So just like we have Quick Look all over the operating system in Mac OS X, you're going to be able to have AR Kit and AR objects throughout the operating system in iOS. And they also announced a partnership and native support from a number of companies, including Adobe. They're going to be integrating with their Adobe Creative Cloud, and they're going to have an iOS app to help users and developers develop augmented reality experiences using USDZ files. Now, USDZ files, like I said, have been around actually since the early days of Pixar. They were developed and used all the way back in A Bug's Life, and it's actually a container file. And the Z part comes from comes about because the file format is what Pixar calls a, quote, zero compression zip file of a bunch of existing USD files. And that package actually acts as a scene, according to Pixar, for the rest of the contained assets. And that USDZ file is a read-only file. So once you have one of those in the system, you're going to be able to read it and view it and pan around it and look at the object, place it in an augmented reality space. But beyond that, you're not going to be able to do much with it unless you get another application to extract the assets so you can actually work on it. And that seems like the tool that Adobe is working on. It's going to allow you to take the USDZ files, unpack them, extract the individual parts, and do a little bit of editing and stuff like that on it. The file is also not allowed to access other files or assets that are external to the package. So that sounds to me like it's got a little bit of its own kind of sandboxing in it. It can contain multiple assets, though, so things like higher resolution assets. But what's really cool is that if you have the file on a device that can't take advantage of those larger assets and doesn't need them, it's not going to impact the performance of the overall rendering and use of that object, of that file. So that's a particularly kind of cool feature. And Apple seemed pretty excited about this new file format, and it seems like they're kind of pushing it as a new standard for augmented reality files. So we'll have to see how that goes. Obviously, there's a lot more information we probably need to dig into to kind of understand how it works, and I expect that to be coming out in some of the later sessions at Worldwide Developer Conference. So as we get more information about the file format and what it can do and how Apple's going to use it, we'll, I'm sure, be talking about that more here on the show. Something you can always count on at one of these keynotes, it seems like, is Apple's ability to Sherlock either an app or a whole bunch of apps that have appeared in the Mac App Store. And I might have to explain Sherlocking for some of those for some of you out there who maybe you've heard the term, but maybe you don't know the provenance, kind of the history of Sherlocking. Back in the day, there was this great application called Sherlock. This was back, I think, in the Mac OS 9 days. And it was this app. It would allow you to kind of access web information and data, say like movie times, without actually having to open up a web browser. And you can even get things like movie previews, and it kind of aggregated a lot of web data in a native app that ran on the Mac. And Apple, and it was called Watson at the time, this app, and Apple kind of took a lot of the concepts and technologies that this third-party app had, and they came out with their own version of it, and you may remember it. It was called Sherlock, and it was built into the operating system. They didn't license or pay for Watson. They didn't buy them out. And so from kind of that day forward, anytime Apple takes a third-party developer feature, something that is in third-party apps, and natively rolls it into the operating system, we call that Sherlocking. So what they did in this keynote with ARKit is they announced a new measurement app. So you know all those apps that use ARKit so you can do various measurements? Apple is going to come out with their own, and you'll be able to get it in iOS 12. And it is simply called Measure, and it actually looks pretty cool. It's an accurate measurement app, and it pretty much works like a lot of the measurement apps that you're used to. So you bring up the augmented reality interface, you point it at the object, you can tap to lay down certain points, you go from point to point, and it will give you a measurement. Has a very simplified UI. It will also be, it's also able to actually do rectangles. So you can point it, say, at a wall or a picture frame or something like that. It will find the edges of the square or the rectangle, and it will give you the measurements of the four sides. So you can kind of go point to point, or you can get measurements of something that's like a rectangle. And so I don't think it's going to replace every third-party measurement app out there, but I think it will replace a number of them, especially if it's even more accurate than some of the ones out there. And I would expect it to be, because Apple has kind of lower level access to a lot of the underlying technology. So we'll have to see how that goes and what people think of that in the early beta process. But it looked pretty interesting and looks like a nice app. Unfortunately, you know, there's going to be some apps that you're no longer going to need to purchase from third-party developers. And then finally, in relation to ARKit, they announced what I thought was the coolest part of the demo with respect to augmented reality, and that is support for shared augmented reality experiences. So today, if you have an ARKit app, you know, you kind of are just looking through your phone, and you're the only one interacting with that augmented reality object. Well, with shared experiences, you can have multiple people looking at the same object, playing in the same game, and doing it all at the same time. Now, I'm not sure exactly how many users it will support, but they did give a really cool demo from Lego, and it allowed you to kind of take a real object and scan it in. It has object detection, so you can actually detect real objects in the world and then add augmented reality objects to it. So they had a Lego set that was a physical real Lego set, and they expanded it with virtual sets. And they mentioned in that app you could have four users playing and experiencing the augmented reality all at the same time. So I don't know if there is a user limit or not, but at the very least, you can have four people interacting with the same ARKit model and ARKit app. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I'm just imagining all of the great applications for that, not just in games, but, you know, in sort of other things. And it's just boggling to the mind. And it seemed to work really, really well. Now, again, this is a worldwide developer conference demo. They practice and rehearse these things. Of course, it's a very controlled environment, so it'll be interesting to see how these things work in the real world. But very cool to see that you now have multi-user support. And I'm imagining playing games with my family and things like that. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to seeing what developers do with that technology. And that was kind of what they covered with respect to ARKit. Then they moved on to photos in iOS 12. They're doing some improvements and enhancements there, starting off with search suggestions. You're now going to be able to search for places, not just by place name, but also by a business or a category. So they're going to tie into an actual database. And if you've taken a photo near a business, that information will be factored into your Siri search. Even cooler, I think, you're able to search by events, both by time and place. So if, say, you're at a marathon and you're taking pictures, or you're at a festival and you're taking pictures, it's going to know about that festival. They mentioned tapping into a database of thousands of event places and times and things like that. So they'll be able to tap into that and use that for Siri photo search suggestions. And you'll be able to also use multiple search terms together to find what you're looking for. So, of course, this ties in to a lot of Apple's artificial intelligence technologies. Also into the For You application, which uses those same AI technologies. They're adding some new features, including something called Featured Photo. So it's going to give you a daily kind of featured photo in your photo application automatically. There's going to be suggestions for effects. So if you have older photos that might be enhanced or improved by doing some of the Apple effects in the photo editor, they're going to make suggestions for that. They're going to show you shared album activity in the For You section, and also suggestions of who you might want to share your photos with using the sharing features. And that's going to tap into the Faces technology and the facial recognition technology that's in the Photos app. So they'll be able to see who's in your photos and say, hey, maybe you want to share these. And it sounds like it's going to be based around things like events. So if you're out with a group of friends, you're taking photos, it will then suggest, hey, maybe you want to share this with the group. And it can automatically create a shared email or a shared text message just from the contact information that you might have on those folks in your contacts database. And of course, from a privacy standpoint, remember, all of this data and information is coming directly from the device. It all happens on device, not out in the cloud. So maintaining your security and privacy. And Apple was very keen during the entire keynote on constantly keeping up that message that they're very much about protecting your security and privacy. And they got even deeper into that when they got into some of the Siri enhancements and features that we're going to talk about a little bit later. Now, one of the big things that I wanted to know about enhancements for was Siri. I am a Siri fan, as you know. I use Siri quite frequently. I know there's a little bit of debate in the community about how useful Siri is, but we're constantly looking for improvements and enhancements to make Siri even work even better for us. And Apple did not disappoint at this Worldwide Developer Conference with that. Now, they did mention that Siri is currently handling about 10 billion requests per month. So she's a pretty busy lady, I would say. But the big news for iOS 12 is that we're going to have some third-party app integration. Now, it's not full open access to security app or to Siri. Apple is doing it with something they're calling Shortcuts and a new Shortcuts app. And what it will allow third-party apps to do is integrate into the Siri Shortcuts. And the way this works is they can define little actions that then when you're in the app, you'll be able to tap a button and add it to the Siri Shortcut apps. And you can then assign your own phrase for that shortcut and then use Siri to enact that shortcut for the third-party app. And it is going to have integration with Siri suggestions. So if an app has a Siri integration and it's something you seem to use a lot, a feature of that app, Siri can suggest, hey, maybe you want to add this as a shortcut for Siri. Now, the Shortcut app itself is basically the integration of the Workflow app. You may remember that Apple purchased Workflow a couple years back or about a year or so ago, and we've been seeing them make enhancements to it. But now it looks like with iOS 12, they're actually going to fully integrate it directly into the operating system, and they are renaming it the Shortcuts app. And you will basically be able to do all the things you could do in Workflow and even more, because you're going to be able to trigger them and set up custom Siri commands for your shortcuts. But basically, you chain together multiple steps in interactions. You create different workflows, and then you can automate those and use them in your share sheet or trigger them now with Siri. And you don't have to be a programmer or an app developer to write them. You have kind of pre-coded blocks, and it's really drag and drop, almost like building out a little recipe, right? You start with one thing and it connects to the next thing, and you can chain things together. And this is cool too, because a lot of people have really wanted the ability to issue one Siri command and then trigger a series of actions that Siri could run through. And you're going to be able to do that with the Shortcuts app. And there are hundreds of actually preset and pre-recorded shortcuts, so you can simply download those and assign Siri commands to those. And of course, they're customizable, so you could find something that does close to what you want it to do and then simply edit it and modify it and create your own version of that. And you'll be able to download them directly, or you can just start from scratch and build your own. They kind of gave a pretty cool demo of it during the keynote. So if you want to see how all this works, if I'm not describing it well enough for you, you can check out the demo. It was pretty impressive, and I think it's a good compromise between security and privacy and opening up Siri to third-party app developers. It seemed to me like a really good compromise, and I'm very excited to see what developers end up doing with it. Again, a lot of the stuff that happens at Worldwide Developer Conference happens in, you know, and I have to admit it, I'm in this place right now, it happens in the reality distortion field. It seems really cool when they show it in the demo, and oftentimes when we start to get into the nitty-gritty and we find out a lot of the details, we start to understand the limitations. And I'm sure there's some limitations here. I'm sure it's not going to be something that's perfect for every app developer. It's probably not going to be everything that we want in terms of third-party Siri integration, but I think overall it's going to be pretty darn good, and I'm excited to see once again what developers will do with it. And that's part of what Worldwide Developer Conference is all about, right? It's introducing developers to the new enhancements and then them getting it into their hands, playing with it in the beta, and really putting it through its paces to see what it can do. And we really won't have a full picture of all of these features until later in the year, in the fall, when actually all of these updates come out. But for right now, I am pretty excited about the enhancements to Siri. It seems like some pretty good ones. Then Apple moved on to what I thought was kind of one of the slower sections of the announcements. I almost felt like this could have been skipped over, but it turned out at the end there was kind of a kicker surprise that there was some significance to these announcements. And I'm talking about some new apps or some enhanced apps in iOS. Starting off with the news app, they've redesigned it. They've added a new sidebar on the iPad, kind of a little bit of a different look. They took the stock app, or the stocks app, which, you know, I guess some people really like. I guess if you're into stocks, it's a pretty useful app, but a lot of us probably don't use it on a day-to-day basis. But they completely rebuilt that. They did an all-new design. Something that I thought was pretty cool was they integrated Apple News, so alongside your stocks, you can get relevant and related business news. You can view the full articles inside the app, and they also announced that the stocks app, is going to be coming to the iPad as well. Another app that they rebuilt and redesigned was the Voice Memo app. They said it was the number one app for doing voice memos or voice recordings on the iPhone. They rebuilt that from the ground up. They added iCloud support, so support for iCloud syncing of your voice memos, which is a welcome addition, and also, again, announced that Voice Memos is going to be available on the iPad. And then finally, they talked about iBooks. It has been renamed, as we kind of expected, Apple Books. And it went through a redesign as well. They've got an all-new store, making browsing easier. They're adding in more editorial content, so kind of giving it the same treatment as they had given the App Store and also iTunes. And they're going to have a Reading Now section where you can kind of get information about authors and books and all this editorial content. So that should be pretty cool, and that is coming in iOS 12 as well. They also talked a little bit about CarPlay, and actually one of the bigger announcements was inside CarPlay. It got a huge reaction from the crowd, and it's probably going to get a huge reaction from you, and that is they're adding support for third-party navigation apps. So you will be able to use Waze with CarPlay, which is something that I know many of you have wanted for a really long time. So that will be coming as well. So all kind of new, redesigned, and updated apps in iOS 12, or a big set of them. I guess I shouldn't say they've all been redesigned. The next kind of topic they talked about fell under the category of what they called limiting distractions. So they noted that, you know, screen time and distractions with our iOS devices have become a bit of a problem, right? Culturally, we're staring at our phones and our devices quite a lot and maybe not interacting with each other as much as we should. And I know I am personally guilty of this. So they developed and are adding a bunch of new technologies in iOS 12 to kind of deal with that and help us maybe better manage and better understand. And I think this is more the key point. Better understand how much we are addicted to or using our devices, whether we want to know it or not. I kind of felt a little bit uncomfortable about some of these features, one in particular, and I'm not sure that I really want to turn it on because I just don't want to know how bad things really are. But they kick things off with Do Not Disturb, one of my favorite features. I use Do Not Disturb, especially at nighttime, so I'm not getting notifications that are waking me up. I also love Do Not Disturb while driving. Well, they are adding a feature that they're calling Do Not Disturb During Bedtime. And if you enable this feature, what it means is that when you pick up your phone off the nightstand at night, like if you're like me and you wake up in the middle of the night, you might want to know what time it is. A lot of us don't have, you know, nightstand clocks anymore. We use our iPhones for that. So if you pick it up and have Do Not Disturb During Bedtime turned on, you're not going to see any of the notifications on the lock screen. Because if you're like me, you pick up the phone, you see those notifications, and then you start interacting with them, right? And that it starts to prevent you from going back to sleep. Now, of course, there's a button there you can tap to get those notifications if you really need to or to check them or want to have them. But it's nice to not have them there kind of distracting you, right? And another really cool feature they're adding is automatic ending times for Do Not Disturb. So you can go into Do Not Disturb mode for, say, just like an hour. And this is going to be great for times where you're like, I don't want to get notifications for the next 2 hours because I really want to stay intently focused on this thing that I'm doing right now. Or I'm going to an event. And you can even set these things up to have ending times based on leaving a location. So imagine you're going to the theater for a while. You want to make sure that Do Not Disturb is turned on, but you can set it to end when you leave the area. So you can use geofencing to kind of control that. And you have a bunch more options with Do Not Disturb. So I thought that was a really cool enhancement, and I'm looking forward to testing and playing around with those. Another thing that they focused on was notifications. They're adding a feature they're calling instant tuning. So a lot of us are overwhelmed just by the number of notifications that we receive on our devices. You'll be able to force press or tap on or into a notification and instantly adjust its settings right from the lock screen. Siri is also going to make suggestions for apps that you're getting notifications on that maybe you're not really using anymore. So it's like, hey, you haven't used this app in a while, but I'm still giving you notifications. Do you want to just turn them off or not have them show up in the lock screen? And you can kind of tweak those settings. And probably the thing related to notifications I'm most excited about is they're adding grouped notifications. So you can have notifications come in a group rather than having that big, long list. They're kind of stacked up, and you can tap into them to view all of them. You'll also be able to clear and manage groups of notifications all at once. So some really kind of cool and nice enhancements to notifications coming in iOS 12. But the big addition to limiting distractions on iOS 12 is something Apple is calling screen time. And what this is going to give you is a weekly report and activity summary of how much time you're spending in your apps and which apps you're spending time in. So, you know, all those social media apps, you're going to know every week how much time you've wasted toiling around in those. And I know I'm going to be guilty of spending way too much time in a lot of those. Another thing that they're going to report on is something called pickup tracking. How many times do you actually just pick up and look at your phone? And how long are you spending looking at your phone? And this is what I'm talking about. I don't think I might not want to know this information, but I actually really secretly do. In the back of my mind, I'd love to have this information because it's going to help change our habits, right? You're going to maybe pull back on that a little bit. And they're adding tools to help you do that. So it's going to be able to do app tracking, pickup tracking, all of this stuff. And then you're going to be able to set app limits for yourself. So you can say, you know what, I only want to spend this amount of time per day or per week with this application, keep track of when I'm doing it, and then alert me, warn me when I'm getting, you know, close to that limit. Hey, you've already spent an hour today on Twitter. That's your limit for the day. Don't do that anymore. I think that's pretty cool. And not only that, they're going to take that and extend it into family sharing and onto your kids' devices as well. So you're going to be able to get reports. Your kids will be able to get reports on what they're doing, but you'll also, as a parent, be able to see those reports and get those reports delivered to you as well. So you can see, what are my kids spending time on? You know, are they on Minecraft Pocket too much? And you'll be able to set allowances based on that data and be able to control their screen time, even down to the apps that they can access during particular times of the day. So if they have educational apps that they need to be using, maybe in the evening, but you don't want them on, you know, social media apps or games, you can tweak and tune that stuff. You can do it by category. You can do it by individual application. You'll be able to do that for your kids, but also for yourself. And I'm kind of excited about that. The ability to actually control that at a granular level or a group level, I think is going to be really, really handy. So again, this is one of those features that sounds great on the surface. The implementation in Apple's demo looked really, really good, but until we're actually able to play with it and know how it works on a day-to-day basis, I'm not going to pass, you know, formal judgment on it, but I am excited about it at this point. So there's a whole group of kind of limiting distractions and taking care of our iPhone, you know, iOS addiction stuff that I thought was, you know, pretty cool in this keynote. Then they moved on to another really cool feature, at least a fun feature, Animoji, right? We all kind of enjoy Animoji, how much we use it. You know, I kind of used it a little bit in the early days. I use it now and then, but it hasn't sort of worked its way into my life maybe the same way that some other iOS technologies have, but it's cool and fun. They added a bunch of new characters. You now have a tiger, a koala, see if I can do this from memory, a T-Rex, and a ghost. I think those are all the new Animoji. But something they added that sounds like a silly feature, but was something I was almost immediately disappointed with Animoji not having, is tongue detection, right? Current Animoji, if you stick out your tongue, nothing really happens. Well, now when you stick out your tongue, the Animoji will stick out its tongue as well. So that was pretty cool. I'm glad they added that. But even cooler is they're adding a new category of emoji or animated emoji called Memoji. And of course, this is Animoji that you can make look like yourself or pretty much anybody or any person or maybe even alien that you want to create, because it seems like to me almost infinitely customizable. You can set skin tone. There's all kinds of eye shapes and eye colors and nose shapes and mouth shapes and ears and accessories. And I mean, the possible combinations looks like it really is infinite. And then once you have your little character created, you can save it off and use it as an Animoji. So you really have personalized, customized Animoji. And even cooler is they're enhancing messages with new camera effects that include stickers in Animoji. So you can take your Memoji and actually put it live over top of your head in kind of an augmented reality mashup of yourself and your Animoji, or I guess I would assume other people, and you know, who really knows, but really, really cool, fun stuff. Again, how useful is this going to be on a day-to-day basis? And how much are we going to use it? I think it's going to depend on the person. I think kids are going to go crazy over this stuff. I know my daughter's already super excited. I'm probably going to have about, 200, 300 Animoji, probably looking like just about every Disney or Pixar character you could ever imagine sitting on my phone. And she's really looking forward to it. So that's exciting and kind of fun. And I don't know. You know, what do you think about Animoji and Memoji? Are you excited? I'm excited to create my own characters. I certainly want an Animoji that looks like me, and that'll be fun to play around with. It's just, you know, how long am I going to do that for? I'm guessing maybe about a week, and then I'll probably tire of it. But it'll be fun for a week nonetheless. And then lastly, and I think they saved the best for last with regard to iOS, is FaceTime. And I'm not a huge FaceTime person, but I am in a number of groups that I interact with, and we use things like Discord or Skype to do, or even Google Hangouts to do group conversations. And even though a lot of us, or maybe all of us in these groups, are iOS and Mac owners, well, the reason we do that is because FaceTime hasn't had group messaging. Well, that is changing in iOS 12. They announced group FaceTime, and leave it to Apple to not do anything in a casual way, because you can do a FaceTime group chat with up to 32 participants. So it's not just, okay, we only have single user FaceTime, and now you can do, you know, four person FaceTime. It's, we have single user FaceTime now. Now, we, oh, guess what? You can do 32 people. And not only that, you can take those 32 people and you can apply all of those effects and Animoji into your video chats inside FaceTime. So yeah, you want to have a bunch of koalas doing a FaceTime chat, 32 koalas, and, you know, throw in a couple unicorns just for good measure. You'll be able to do that with group FaceTime. So another really cool feature that has been a long time in coming. I know a lot of people have wanted the ability to do group FaceTime chats, and you'll be able to do that starting with iOS 12. So overall, a lot of really great new enhancements to iOS 12. I have to tell you, across the board on this WWDC keynote, I was shocked and surprised by a lot of the new features. I think Apple has brought some of the magic back. They've been able to keep a lot of these features and announcements quiet. And I was not expecting a lot from this keynote, and I think they delivered a lot more than I was really expecting. So that was kind of exciting and fun to see. Moving on from iOS, they talked a little bit about watchOS 5. Really two areas they're focusing on there: new health and fitness applications and enhancements, and then new ways to connect using your Apple Watch. So inside the health and fitness piece, they're going to add competitions and challenges, friend challenges, to your activity. So you'll be able to set up weekly fitness challenges with your friends and compete for points. And then at the end of the week, it will award the winner with a badge. And you can do that every week. So I'm not a real competitive person, especially when it comes to health and fitness stuff. I have been in a few groups with fitness sharing, but it's never really stuck for me. But for people who are into that, I think it's going to be a kind of fun new addition to the Apple Watch. They also announced a couple new workouts that you can add. Yoga and hiking workouts are going to be supported. And I know, especially on the yoga side, there's a lot of people that were wanting that as a workout option. So that's cool to see. I think hiking is also going to be very, very popular among a number of people. They added a number of enhancements to running workouts. You're going to be able to get rolling mile paces for running, and also pace and cadence alerts as you're doing running workouts. And something that for me has also been a problem is they're going to be able to detect when you start a workout or start activity. So I assume by looking at, you know, how fast you're moving and how far you're moving, and also if you've got more of an elevated heart rate. And if you've forgotten to start your workout, it'll alert you and say, hey, it looks like you've started a walking workout or a running workout. Would you like to start this now? And it will retroactively give you credit for the time that you missed. So the time it sees you starting, even though you didn't go into the workout app and start that workout, it will roll back retroactively. And it will also be able to do that for stopping a workout. So I've had that problem too, where I've started a walking workout. I've finished my walk, come home, and then realized 30 minutes later, I never stopped the workout, right? So it'll be able to detect when you stop working out as well, and then give you an alert if you forgot to stop your workout, and retroactively go back and remove any credit, extra credit that you may have received from that workout. So some nice little health and fitness enhancements there that they showed off. And then on the connected side of things, a new way to communicate with your Apple Watch, something Apple is calling walkie-talkie, and it works over cellular or Wi-Fi, and pretty much exactly how you would expect it to. What you'll be able to do is add friends and family as walkie-talkie partners. So if they have an Apple Watch and you have an Apple Watch, you can set up a connection between those two things. And then you simply get in the interface a little talk button, and it works just like a walkie-talkie. You hold down the talk button, you say what you want to say. When you let go, your message, your audio message is sent. On the receiving side, you get a little alert, also a tap on the wrist that a new walkie-talkie message is coming in, and then that message is automatically played. And if you want to respond, you do the same thing on your Apple Watch. You hold down the little talk button, say your message, and when you release the talk button, off it goes. And it does happen automatically that the audio is broadcast from device to device, but it does appear, although they didn't show this in the demo, that for certain people and for certain times, you can make yourself unavailable for walkie-talkie messages. So, you know, you're not in that business meeting and having these audio messages come in on your watch and automatically play. I'm hoping there's a setting for that universal, but it does look at the very least like there is a setting for, you know, a single pairing. And you, so you can set up pairings between different people, and you can have multiple ones set up all at the same time. And again, this is another one of those features that I think with families and friends, it's going to be particularly useful. I don't think you're going to be setting up a bunch of walkie-talkies with just random people, right? These are going to be the people closest to you. And it'll be interesting to see how people use this feature. I think it's a little bit more useful if you have a cellular Apple Watch. Using it with Wi-Fi, I guess, will be useful in some instances, but certainly not when you're like out and about. The place I see this being particularly useful is if you're out, you're at an event, or maybe you're on vacation or something like that, and you need to be separated for a little while. Being able to quickly communicate back and forth, I think, could be pretty, pretty handy. So it'll be interesting to see if this is one of those features that sort of ingrains itself into daily use on the Apple Watch. But certainly something that it gives a great tech demo, and I'm looking forward to trying out. There were also some enhancements, or are going to be some enhancements, to the Siri Watch Face. Third-party apps are going to be able to integrate with that and show up on the Siri Watch Face. They're also adding support for shortcuts. So if you set up your shortcuts and you want to trigger them from the Siri Watch Face, you'll be able to do that. And also, you're no longer going to have to use Hey Siri with the Siri Watch Face. You'll be able to just raise your Apple Watch, use the raise your wrist action, and be able to issue a Siri command, because it already knows, hey, you're interacting with the watch face when it wakes up on wrist detection. So that was pretty cool. They also announced a new Pride watch face and band that is going to be available in the App Store, and those are both available, or were available, starting today. So that is June 4th as I'm recording this podcast. And you can access the new Pride watch face by just going into the customization on your Apple Watch, doing the force press, and going in and adding a new watch face. And you'll see the Pride face available there. It only has space for just two complications, so it's a little more simplified watch face than maybe some of the others that you're used to, but still nice to have another cool watch face on Apple Watch. Notifications also are going to get a little bit of an enhancement. You'll have the ability to have interactive notifications. Third-party apps will be able to integrate, and you can kind of interact a little bit more with your notifications. And they announced the ability to get some web content available through WebKit inside notifications on the Apple Watch. So you'll be able to get a little bit more information. It's unclear how this is going to be formatted. They did mention that it will be using some of the reader technology, so you can kind of get that simplified view. I have to imagine that it'll be a little bit limited. We had a little conversation because some of us in the chat today in the Slack channel were web developers, and we were wondering, you know, are we going to have to build another kind of interface or breakpoint for web content on Apple Watch? And I'm thinking not. I think it's going to be a little bit more automated and a little bit more seamless behind the scenes, but maybe there will be some tweaking that you can do or some enhancements you can do to your website to better make the content available to Apple Watch. But I'm hoping that it's not going to be something that's going to be mandated or required. We'll have to see as Apple gives some of the internet sessions during Worldwide Developer Conference what information comes out related to this. But, you know, a little bit more information on the Apple Watch itself is going to be, I think, handy for a lot of people. A huge announcement was that they're bringing the podcasts app to the Apple Watch. So this is something that I know a lot of people have been wanting for a long time. So you'll be able to get your podcast subscriptions automatically synced over to your Apple Watch. Or if you have a Apple Watch that supports cellular data or you're on Wi-Fi, you'll be able to stream podcasts over to the Apple Watch. And finally, they are adding the ability to add student ID cards to the wallet and also to your Apple Watch. That is coming in the fall. It's going to be limited to a handful of universities at first, but then they're going to be trying to roll that out to more and more universities over time. Now, Watch OS 5 is going to support all Series 1 Apple Watches and up, but it is not going to be, it's going to be the first release, I believe, that's not going to be supported on the OG Apple Watch, on the original Apple Watch. And the only reason this is kind of a big deal in my mind is that that means that those folks, and we don't know how many of these people there are, but there are some, those folks who bought one of those limited edition or Apple edition watches, rather, the ones that started at $10,000, yeah, they're not going to be able to update to the latest version of watchOS. And this is after, what, about 3-4 years of Apple Watch being available? So that stings a little bit. And there's kind of a big deal being made about that in the media. I don't think it's that huge a deal, but it is something that is interesting to think about, right? That you have just been obsoleted on a $10,000, even up to $17,000 product. I think that was the price on the gold Apple Watch edition, the kind of special gold edition. So, yeah, ouch. But that was kind of it for watchOS. Then they moved on and did a little bit of talk about tvOS, and specifically tvOS on Apple TV 4K. Probably the biggest announcement there is support for Dolby Atmos on Apple TV. So they pointed out that the Apple TV 4K, once that is released and updated, will be the only streaming box that supports both Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision, or that is both Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision certified. They are going to have the Dolby Atmos support limited by the available titles, but Apple does say that iTunes is going to be the, quote, home to the largest collection of Dolby Atmos supported movies anywhere at the time of the update. And support for Dolby Atmos on Apple TV 4K is going to be coming out later this year. a few other enhancements to Apple TV and the Apple TV app. They announced zero sign-on support on limited broadband providers, Charter Spectrum being the first one in the U.S. So you're probably familiar with a couple of years ago, Apple came out with single sign-on for your cable subscription and channels on Apple TV, meaning that all of those applications that would require that you go authenticate that you have cable service for that channel or that provider, right? That whole thing where you'd have to go to a website and enter like a four-digit code or something like that. You were able to do that just one time, and then it would store that information, and then any other app that required that, it would automatically log into. Well, with zero sign-on, if you're on the provider's broadband network already, they're going to be able to automatically detect that, and you won't have to do that authentication at all. So again, Charter Spectrum is going to be the first to support that, and they're hoping to roll that out to other providers. And so that's going to make using those apps much more convenient for folks. I just wish they could roll these things out quicker, but doing the deals and getting support from the providers, that just unfortunately takes time, and yeah, you're going to have to wait for that a little bit. But cool new feature nonetheless. Another thing they announced was third-party home control systems are going to be supported. These are control systems like Control 4, Crestron, and Savant. They're going to add support for that, including Siri voice search and control support. So if you have one of those platforms or systems, you're going to be able to integrate that with your Apple TV and Siri. And then also they announced some new aerial locations. Those are Apple's really cool screensavers, the location being the Earth. They worked with the International Space Station to create some gorgeous screensavers slowly panning over the Earth, going through day and night, different locations, and that was really cool. Another thing that they added, which I was, you know, frankly excited to see, is like how many times have you had your Apple TV on, some great panoramic screensaver comes up, and you're like, that is gorgeous, where is that, right? And you're trying to, in your head, figure out where it is. Sometimes you can figure out, oh, yeah, that looks, it's probably Dubai, you know, I don't really know, or that's the Mojave Desert, or whatever it might be. Well, now you can actually tap, and it will tell you the location. It seems like such a small thing, but it's a nice, cool, new enhancement. An enhancement to the TV app and tvOS. So tvOS 12, it's going to support fourth generation Apple TV and the Apple TV 4K, and will be available in the fall. Now, one thing that unfortunately wasn't announced with regards to tvOS is multi-user support. And I have a feeling that's the thing that is keeping Netflix from integrating with the TV app, right? Netflix supports multiple users on a Netflix account, and not being able to tie those two things together, specifically with things like the For You suggestions, I think is holding it back. And, you know, Apple TV is something that sits in your living room. It's expected that you would have multiple users on that. So I keep hoping that's something that Apple is going to add, but it doesn't look like it's going to be coming in tvOS 12. Okay, we got to move on to kind of the last big announcement, which would be macOS. But before we do that, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another one of my show sponsors, and that is Simple Contacts. Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in just minutes. It's vision care for the 21st century. Instead of heading to your doctor every single year to renew your prescription for something you wear every day, you could take a few minutes out of your day and do it on your own time and terms. And so how does it all work? Well, it's pretty simple. When you need to renew your prescription, you simply take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or your computer. Then that test is reviewed by a licensed doctor, and you receive a renewed prescription and reorder your contacts. It really is that simple. You'll just need your current contacts, a connection to the internet, and about 10 feet of space to complete the whole process. And who doesn't have that, right? And do you already have an unexpired prescription? Well, then it gets even better, because all you have to do is upload a photo or your doctor's information and order your lenses. Even simpler. Now, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, so you still have to do that. But for prescription renewals and ordering contacts, Simple Contacts is really, I think, the way to go. It's fast, only takes about 5 minutes. It's convenient, no more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You can order from anywhere, and it offers you a choice. Simple Contacts has all the brands and types of lenses you're familiar with, so you'll never have to shop around to find your lenses at the best price. Plus, Simple Contacts has been rated 5 stars over 3,000 times in the App Store, and you can text the support team and always speak with and get a real person, not a robot. It really is a great service, and you'll save not only time, but money too. A vision test with Simple Contacts is just $20. Now compare that to an appointment, which without insurance could cost over $200. You get great contact lenses at great prices, standard shipping is free, and best of all, they're offering MacCast listeners even more savings. You get $30 off contacts at simplecontacts.com/MacCast. Or by entering the code MACCAST at checkout. So simplecontacts.com/MACCAST to get $30 off your contacts, or use the code MACCAST, MACCAST. Really, it couldn't be easier. So check out Simple Contacts, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MACCAST. Let's finish up things today talking a little bit about the new macOS coming out in the fall, and also a few little odds and ends, some stuff that came out after some of the Worldwide Developer Conference announcements, and that'll finish things up for today. So we're going to start off by talking about the next version of macOS, and of course, the question that most people always have is, what is the new name? Apple started a couple years ago using, you know, inspiring places in California as the names for the new operating system. And as Craig Federighi pointed out, they've kind of been stuck in the mountains for a while. We started in the ocean with Mac OS Mavericks, and then they moved on to, let's see if I can remember how we did this. We did Mac OS Yosemite, and then El Capitan, and then we went to Sierra, and then High Sierra, right? So this time around, they went with the desert to Mac OS Mojave. I think Sonoma was also in the running, if I remember from the last episode of the MacCast. I think we talked about that here. I can never remember sometimes where I talk about things on podcasts. But regardless, Mac OS Mojave, they said the new version of the operating system is inspired by pro users, but designed for everyone. They also said that they were inspired not just by the desert during the day, but by the desert at night. And all of that translates to mean that they're enabling dark mode. For those of you who don't know, what we have now is called light mode, right? Everything's kind of white and bright. Dark mode means that all the UI interface elements are darkened. You've got blacks and grays and things like that. And a lot of people, especially pro users, especially photographers and also developers, really do like and enjoy dark mode in their apps. And I have to say, it looks pretty nice. I'm not a huge dark mode person. I actually prefer the light mode most of the time, even though I am a developer. But hey, you're going to have the choice now. And something that's kind of really cool is you'll be able to change those modes based on time of day. So you can kind of have it automatically move from maybe light mode in the morning into dark mode in the evening. And you can even change your desktop background as that happens. So you can kind of scroll through from light to dark, which is kind of cool and fun. Again, some of these features sometimes in enhancements, I don't know day to day how useful they will be, but certainly something fun to play around with and adds a little bit more customization to your Mac, right? You can kind of put your own spin and your own personality on it, which I think is always a good thing. And something I always think a lot of people wish they had more of, right? Apple kind of limits us in some ways to kind of how we can customize things. But on the Mac, we usually have a little more options. So dark mode is coming in Mac OS Mojave. They also announced a new feature for folks out there who maybe suffer from a little bit of desktop clutter, right? We're all guilty of this at some point, some maybe more than others, right? You have stuff all over your desktop. Well, they've added a new thing called Desktop Stacks. You'll be able to go up in the file menu or in the Finder menu, select Desktop Stacks, and it will take everything on your desktop and organize that for you automatically into little stacks based on whatever you want. You can actually base it on the kind of files that you have, the dates of your files, or even by tags. And you can scrub through stacks. You can expand them open and see what's in those stacks. You can even drag and drop directly out of your stacks. And if you throw something new onto your desktop that wasn't there before and you've got stacks enabled, it will automatically move it into your organized stacks. So you can kind of instantly declutter your desktop. I'm assuming you could reclutter it as well by disabling stacks, and everything would go back to very likely where it was spewn and strewn all over your desktop. I personally am a pretty much I need my desktop to be clutter-free kind of person. I do occasionally throw a bunch of stuff on my desktop, but if it starts to get too cluttered, I've always been in the habit of grabbing all of those things and throwing it into a folder on my desktop. It's usually just labeled like stuff or random stuff or something like that. So not even more organized. It's just that it's all in one place now and not strewn all over my desktop. So I actually think I probably will like Desktop Stacks quite a bit. And that is a feature I do plan on using. Another area that Apple's going to focus on in macOS Mojave is the Finder, particularly with respect to previews and preview images or document previews. They're adding a new gallery view. It allows you to preview images and thumbnails of your documents. And I saw this in the demo and I immediately thought, oh, they're bringing back CoverFlow. It's actually CoverFlow, I think, Plus or CoverFlow Enhanced, because they're going to have a few more options. You're going to be able to get a sidebar with a lot of metadata information, and you can actually customize and control what metadata information you see. And at the bottom of the preview panel, you're also going to have a number of quick actions. And that panel's not going to be just available in the new gallery view, but also in all of your other views as well. So you can see more metadata information, get more details on your files, and do little quick actions. And those quick actions are going to be contextual. So depending upon what kinds of files you have selected and items, you'll be able to do things like merge a bunch of images into, say, like a single PDF. And you'll be even able to add your own quick actions, and you can build those things out with, say, Automator or something like that, and throw them into that sidebar view. So the gallery view looks pretty cool. It'll also have contextual access to things like, you know, markup and some of the other features that are in Mac OS. In addition, they announced some enhancements to Quick Look. I am a huge fan of Quick Look. I use it almost every day inside the Finder. They announced integration with markup. So if you pull up a, say, PDF or an image inside Quick Look, you'll have access to the markup features, and you can quickly throw a signature on a document or maybe add some annotations and then send that off in an email or a text message. If it's an audio or video file, you'll have quick access to be able to do trimming and editing of that. And those look like some nice enhancements into Quick Look as well. Another thing they've focused on is screenshots. It has a new heads-up display interface with some additional options. They also added the ability to get screen capture for video inside screenshots. And you can now set a custom save location for your screenshots so they don't have to just end up, again, strewn all over your desktop. You can say, hey, I want my screenshots to be saved over here, and that will happen all automatically for you. And then a new enhancement to continuity, the ability to use your iPhone camera and have that go right into a document or file on your Mac. So if you're working with a keynote presentation and maybe you have a location for a photo, you can pull out your iPhone and through Continuity Camera, take a picture right on your iPhone and have it automatically transferred and inserted right into your document. And that could be a Keynote file, a Pages document, something like that. And I thought that was a pretty cool new enhancement to Continuity. Again, they talked a little bit about the apps and actually some new apps on the Mac in macOS Mojave. They're adding the News app, the Stocks app, the Voice Memos app, and finally, the Home app for the Mac. So you'll be able to control all of your HomeKit devices right there on the Mac. And there is a reason it's those four particular apps. Are they sounding familiar yet? Yeah, we heard about those a little bit earlier. And I am saving for kind of my own personal one more thing, the reason for those four apps. So we'll get to that in just a moment. They also talked about privacy in macOS. There's going to be more privacy protection for locations inside macOS. And Safari has a bunch of new privacy enhancements as well, including the ability to stop things like share buttons and comment forms from being able to track you. So last year in Safari, they added do not tracking features so that, tracking in ads and inside analytics and stuff like that could be blocked. You could tell sites to not track you. Well, this time around, they're adding that same ability into some of the sharing additions that many sites use. So the share buttons for, say, like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all those sorts of things, those can actually have tracking code and can follow you as you move between websites. Also, similarly, they can do that with like third-party discussion and commenting systems. So you'll be able to block that stuff and you'll get a little notification asking you if you want to enable that functionality or keep it turned off. And it basically will just disable that functionality on the websites you're visiting. Another way that sites can potentially track you is through something called fingerprinting. And this is something even as an app developer, I kind of knew existed, but I don't really think about on a daily basis. And that is that sites are able to glean information from the device that you're viewing that website on. So whether it's a Mac, what version of the operating system you have installed, your geolocation, where you're coming from. But even if you have that disabled, they might use things like your system configuration, the plugins that you have installed. And in aggregate, all of those things together can be looked at and used to determine, hey, this is a unique device. Yes, they maybe don't know specifically who that device belongs to, but they do know that it's your device and that if you visit this one website and then go to another website, they can take that same profile, match it up and say, oh, you just moved from this website or this computer just moved from this website to this other website, and they can use that for tracking as well. So Apple's going to add some new controls and systems inside Safari to stop that. Basically, it will only offer up to the website a simplified version of your system configuration. It won't show what plugins you're using, and when it asks, it will only show the system fonts, not a lot of, say, your customized fonts and things like that. And so that lessens its ability to be able to kind of fingerprint your computer, and your computer ends up looking like any other Mac that might be visiting that website. So Apple really trying to focus, again, on that security and privacy, shut down a lot of the tracking that, you know, frankly, many users probably don't even know is happening to them. So again, it looks like you'll be able to customize this. You'll be able to turn it on and off. But by default, I think a lot of these controls and things are going to be turned on. And I think ultimately for most people, that's going to be a good thing, right? A little less tracking in our lives, I think, is something that we can all probably benefit from, because it is getting rampant and kind of crazy as the news has played out in recent months. Apple also talked about the Mac App Store that is going to be completely redesigned in Mac OS Mojave. There's going to be a new Discover tab that's going to offer editorial on Mac apps along with top charts. And they're also kind of reorganizing the main sections, not categories, because there's still going to be a categories tab that you can go into and drill down into. But they're going to create four different kind of areas that you can explore. There's actually going to be a section called Create with all kinds of creative applications. There's going to be one called Work that's going to focus on a lot of the productivity applications. You're going to have Play with all of the games. And there is going to be a Developer tab with developer-based applications. And again, inside there, they're going to have, you know, editorial content, top charts, all related to those specific areas. And then they also have enhanced and are going to improve their product pages. They're going to bring in video previews, which they've never had in the Mac App Store. And there is going to be a ratings and reviews API that developers can tap into, because, you know, reviews are super, super handy and helpful when you're trying to find applications. I know I use them all of the time to kind of determine, hey, is this something I really want to spend my money on? Is this a good app? And you can go through, and I try to look at both the kind of top rated reviews, the most helpful reviews, and even the most critical reviews to try and figure out, you know, is there really a problem with this app, or is this just people kind of being snooty or snotty because they're not happy that this is, say, an app that charges subscription pricing, something that seems to set people off a lot. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad app. It just means that philosophically, maybe someone doesn't agree with the pricing scheme that the developer has chosen to try and, you know, earn a living off of his app. And I've never been one to be super critical of subscription pricing. I think it can get a little bit overwhelming when we have so many apps. But again, it's something that's working out for a lot of app developers. And there's a lot of great applications, I think, that are well worth subscribing to. So, you know, it doesn't put me off as much as it used to back in the old days. And it certainly isn't a reason to just ding an application in a review. You know, it's not one star because your subscription pricing. Let's evaluate the apps based on their actual value and merit, and is it a good app? And again, by looking through those reviews and reading them, they can be really helpful in determining if this is an app that you want to buy. So it's nice to see they're adding a ratings and reviews API for Mac apps, just like they have for iOS apps. And I thought one of the bigger announcements, which just kind of came about at the end of them talking about the Mac App Store, was that some apps that had gone away are going to be returning. And apparently that's because Apple has made some improvements to sandboxing. So apps like Transmit from Panic, that's coming back. Also BB Edit coming back to the Mac App Store. And Transmit and Panic specifically in a tweet commented on this. They said, hey, you know, they changed and made some improvements there, so we are going to be back on the Mac App Store. So that was kind of a big announcement. Now, they did also, with respect to Transmit, say there is a little bit of a twist, and that twist turned out to be that Transmit on the Mac App Store is going to be subscription priced based, although you will still be able to get a direct standalone version from panic.com, from the website. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what people choose in terms of getting it from the Mac App Store at a subscription versus buying it direct from Panic. And I have a feeling that may be something that they're doing specifically to kind of see how people react, or, you know, maybe there could be some other reasons for that. It could be financial. I guess we'd probably have to ask Panic about that, but interesting nonetheless to see that they're kind of taking that tact with their return to the Mac App Store. A couple of other apps that Apple announced coming to the Mac App Store: Microsoft Office 365. Again, interesting because that is solely a subscription-based application. And Adobe Lightroom CC, also a subscription-based app, coming to the Mac App Store. But we hadn't seen either of those on the Mac App Store before, so some things must be changing in the new version of the Mac App Store. Apple also went on to discuss a couple of new enhancements to some things particularly of interest to developers, new versions and updated versions of Metal, and also Apple's machine learning technologies, Create ML and Core ML2. Those are being updated and are going to allow developers to tap into and get model training for their machine learning on their Mac apps much easier. There have been a lot of third-party tools for that, but Apple providing some new first-party tools that that developers can tap into. So expect to see more machine learning and AI in your apps in the future on Mac OS Mojave. And then that thing that I kind of teased you about, you know, why are we seeing Apple bringing some Mac apps or some apps to the Mac that we hadn't seen in the past, specifically Stocks, the news app, Voice Memos, and Home? Well, that is because of the thing formerly known as Marzipan, and now referred to as the Universal Framework API. Apple is adding some new tools and features internally for now, just specifically for them, but stuff that will eventually roll out to developers, Apple says, in 2019. But some things that are going to make it easier for an app developer to take an app that was developed for iOS and move that and port it over to macOS. Now, they didn't give us a lot of details on this, but they did go into it a little bit. And what it looks like they're doing is they're taking some parts of the UI kit, the user interface kit, and moving those over, or at least finding ways to integrate them with some of the core foundations and functionalities that exist on macOS. So on macOS, as far as user interface goes, you have something called AppKit. And on iOS, you have something called UIKit. And so they're kind of merging some of those things. And the reason for this is that AppKit sits above some of the common foundations that both iOS and macOS share. Things like CoreOS, Core Services, and your media files. Well, the frameworks are generally different, but they pulled over some of the key frameworks to allow iOS apps actually work as Mac apps. And as you might imagine, these are some pretty obvious things. Things like trackpad and mouse input. You wouldn't have that on an iOS app, but you would need it in your Mac app. And so rather than having to kind of rewrite everything from scratch, you're able to take those things with the enhancements that Apple is doing with the Universal Framework API, and they will be kind of automatically transmitted or translated into trackpad and mouse movements. So I would imagine a lot of your swipes and finger inputs are going to be automatically handled or handled with a little bit of code tweaking. Also, things like app windows and the support for the spotlights, you know, maximize, full screen, minimize, all those sorts of things, close. Those need to be handled because they don't exist in your iOS app. Window resizing, also not something you would have in an iOS app, but you would need in a Mac app. Scroll bars and things like copy-paste, drag-and-drop integration into the system services on macOS. All of those things are going to kind of be handled by this Universal Framework API, and it will make moving an iOS app over to the Mac a little bit easier for developers. And the hope there is that means that more developers, where it makes sense to have a cross-platform application, will be doing that, because some of them are sticking with just iOS and not really bringing their Mac their apps over to the Mac. And so they're hoping to change that. They're going to be rolling out this out in a couple phases, as we kind of mentioned earlier. So first phase is Apple doing it with some of their own applications, News, Stocks, Voice Memos, and Home. And then eventually rolling that out to developers sometime next year. So I expect to hear a lot more about this and how it works specifically at Worldwide Developer Conference 2019. But with that, that kind of rolls it out. That kind of wraps it up for all of the announcements that Apple made at Worldwide Developer Conference. As far as when the betas are going to be available, they're actually out and available to developers now. All of the betas, both macOS, iOS, and tvOS, watchOS, developers can get access to those now. They are expected to have public betas out later this summer. So if you want to test it out, great, you can do that. But I would highly advise that unless you are a developer, especially with the first version of the beta, be very, very careful. I wouldn't install it on any of my day-to-day devices. If you have an extra device, a spare Mac or something like that, or you want to maybe run it in a dual boot situation, you could probably do that. But generally, don't run betas on your personal devices unless you have an extra to spare. And certainly make sure that you have backups, you have ways to roll back should something go wrong. But you can fully expect that there's going to be bugs, there's going to be issues, there's going to be apps that aren't supported. And you don't want to run into that situation with your critical day-to-day machines and devices. So just be very, very careful. I know it's exciting to kind of get all of these new features. I know there's a bunch of them I want to try out and play around with, but I am going to hold myself back, try and remain calm, and just wait. Eventually, I will probably end up loading this on one of my older Macs that I have lying around. Although, as far as which Macs are supported, there actually is a big change, and actually we should talk about that a little bit. For Mac OS High Sierra, I think Apple supported Macs and devices rolling back all the way back into like 2008, 2009. Right now, it's looking like the specifications for Mac OS Mojave are going to be machines that are 2012 and later. So there's kind of a big gap of machines that are going to be left out of Mac OS Mojave, at least for right now. I don't know if that's permanent, if Apple will change that and sort of work their way backwards. But with these current betas, you do need to have a machine that is about 2012 vintage or newer. So just be aware of that. And if you have an older machine, you're going to be stuck with High Sierra for probably the rest of time, at least for the rest of the lifespan of that machine. But again, that's all of the announcements that Apple made during the keynote. Now, as usual, there are some unannounced features and some things that came out after the event, and we'll have more of those as the week goes on, because Worldwide Developer Conference isn't just the keynote. It actually goes on for a few days, and Apple has a bunch of sessions and things like that. And also, now that the betas are out, people are digging into them. They're finding a lot of the unannounced features, or the features that show up just on those comprehensive slides that Apple does during the keynote, right? Usually toward the end, they'll have a slide with a bunch of features that they didn't specifically cover, but that are coming. Now, one of those key features is the health records API. That is being opened up to developers, something that will be accessible inside the Health app. This is your ability to, if you want to opt in to have your medical records kind of tracked and shared with various applications through the Health app, it makes it possible for you to share medical records from multiple hospitals with your favorite trusted apps, according to Apple. Health records data is actually encrypted and protected on the device by your passcode. None of the information is ever sent to Apple's servers, and the data has to be shared with your permission. And it's limited to a couple of different categories, kind of four main categories. There's going to be medication tracking that it seems like is enabled through the MediSafe medication management application. So I think that's actually a company and service that specifically works with pharmacies and stuff like that to track medication. And the nice thing about that is if you have multiple medications and you're getting those from multiple places, it will be able to detect that and warn you if there's any kind of bad interactions that you should be aware of. So you can kind of get alerts and notifications. another category is disease management, nutrition planning, and medical research. So developers will have access to that health records API, and that's a nice new feature that's going to be inside the health app. Now, I know Apple said they were focused on purely software during this event, but there was a few kind of minor, I guess you could call them hardware announcements. Apple did release its new summer colors of the silicone iPhone cases and Apple Watch Sport Bands. They're those pastel colors. Typically in the fall, we have kind of the dark colors. In the summer, we have the more pastel colors. So you now have peach, marine green, and sky blue as options for iPhone cases and covers and Apple Watch Sport Bands. And another interesting and quasi-hardware related update that came out after the keynote, Apple quietly swapped out its 29-watt USB-C power adapter for a 30-watt version. So it now has 1 watt more. It's the same price, still $50, $49 US. Why they made that tweak or change, who really knows? I don't know what you get for that extra. Well, you get one extra watt of power, but why we needed one more watt is somewhat of a mystery at this point. But there you go. That is at least one hardware update coming out of Worldwide Developer Conference. Some interesting discoveries are being made inside iOS 12 now that the beta is in the hands of some folks, including the media. And what they've discovered is that Face ID in iOS 12 has a new setting for a, quote, alternate appearance. And under that in the description, it says, in addition to continuously learning how you look, Face ID can recognize an alternate appearance. And 9 to 5 Mac did some playing around with this, and they confirmed that in addition to just a different look, you could potentially add a second person to Face ID. So I guess in a way, this allows you to share an iPhone a little bit. It's not two separate accounts, but you could have two separate people that are able to unlock it using Face ID. If you do reset the Face ID on the device, though, both of the appearances are actually wiped out. So I'm trying to think of the application for this. I guess if you have two drastically different looks that you give yourself on a basis, then maybe if you grow facial hair really, really fast. But, you know, typically Face ID can kind of account for that. But I guess if you don't want to have to be constantly kind of retraining it, based on your appearance by entering the passcode lock, this might be a little bit handy. Or again, if you have a second person that you need to allow access to the phone. But if what I remember from Face ID is correct, is that if that second person doesn't, you know, unlock your phone on a regular basis, it will eventually forget that face, right? It only remembers the faces that it's seeing and unlocking on a regular basis. I think it has that kind of 48-hour or maybe week. There's a timeout that happens, and I don't remember the length of time for Face ID. I think it's a little bit longer than it was for Touch ID. With Touch ID, if you fail to use the fingerprint sensor for, I think, a 48-hour period, then it will go back to being locked out and you have to use Touch ID again. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what the deal is with that alternate appearance setting, but it is there now in the iOS 12 beta. Another cool thing that was discovered in the beta is something called Security Code Autofill. This is for any accounts that you might have that where you might have two-factor authentication enabled, where it actually texts you a four-digit or a six-digit passcode that you have to enter in. And what will happen is with the security code autofill, when you receive that text message in the Messages app, it will get added automatically to your autofill suggestions. So it will be able to say inside Safari, autofill that code, so you don't have to go copy and paste it over from the Messages app or try and remember it from inside the notification, like, you know, and I do that constantly, like real quickly try to remember that code and then enter it in and then hope you get it right. Well, now it's actually going to automatically, or will have the ability to automatically fill that in, which is pretty cool. A few more things related to Siri. You know, Apple focused on and talked a lot about the shortcuts and the ability to add, you know, new shortcuts to Siri, but there were a few more skills that Apple is going to be adding themselves. Siri's going to know a lot more about food-related stuff, specifically like how many calories are in something or how much fat a particular food might have. She also is going to have the ability to look up and, I would assume, autofill passwords. So you can get stuff out of your keychain and have that automatically filled in. Hopefully she's not going to be like speaking out your password to you. I don't think that would be too secure. So I would imagine what would happen is I get to a website and I can maybe ask Siri to fill in my account information. And that could be pretty cool. And also HomeKit control using Siri is going to be coming to Siri on the Mac. And I guess that's not surprising considering they're also bringing the Home application to the Mac. So it seems like a natural extension that once you have Home on the Mac, you'll be able to use Siri to control your HomeKit devices from your Mac. Now, we talked about Animoji and the new tongue detection. It turns out that Animoji also is gaining wink detection. And I didn't realize this wasn't a feature of current Animoji, but apparently if you wink at your Animoji under iOS 11, what you actually get is a blink. And starting with iOS 12, it will actually be able to detect and actually react to a wink with just one eye. So you can wink and stick out your tongue at the same time, and your emoji is going to, or your Animoji rather, or your Memoji, I would assume, is going to react accordingly. Another thing related to ARKit and augmented reality, and this is pretty cool, is you'll be able to have location links attached to your AR objects. So if you have an AR item that you've generated with an app and placed it down in a location, you have the ability to potentially, or an app developer has the ability to potentially geotag that as well and keep that item, that virtual item, in a location. So that means the next time someone else goes to that location, they can actually see that object and interact with it. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what app developers do with that. But, you know, the immediate application that comes to mind is like AR geocaching, right? You can have like a treasure chest that you drop somewhere and you can put some stuff in there and then someone else could come along and find it and maybe add items or remove items, something like that. So that seems like pretty cool and could be a lot of fun. Something that wasn't announced that's going to be of great excitement to photographers out there is apparently you're going to get the ability with the iPad Pro to edit raw photos. So raw photo editing coming to the iPad Pro in iOS 12. iPads and iPhones are going to be able to, of course, import and manage raw photos, but you're not going to be able to edit on those devices. I'm assuming that's, you know, related to the processing power and memory that's available in the iPad Pro. And then one last thing, and I'm super excited about this. There is a password managing API. I know you wouldn't think that would be that exciting, but what that means is that third-party applications, applications like 1Password, are now going to be able to be used by Safari as a data source. So that means inside Safari, you're going to be able to autofill 1Password directly, meaning that you're not going to have to use the share sheet anymore. You'll be able to just access your 1Password passwords. Of course, if 1Password adds that, but they've already tweeted out that they're super excited about support for that. So expect that to be coming, you know, I would imagine it'll be available right when iOS 12 launches in the fall. I think 1Password and probably a number of the other password management apps and services are going to be on top of that, because that's been something that many of us have been wanting in iOS for a while now. So looking forward to that. But with that, I think that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. And it was a big one, right? We had a lot of stuff to cover. Like I said, I was super excited at the end of this keynote. I think it was one of the better keynotes that we've had for Apple and the Mac in a while. So what do you think? Did you enjoy the keynote? Are you excited about some of these features? Share some of your thoughts and feedback with us. Shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. Few little housekeeping items to talk to you about this week. Don't forget about MacStock 2018. I am going to be giving a talk there, but don't come just for me. Check out the full speaker list. You can go to MacStockConferenceAndExpo.com/speakers. There are some amazing folks speaking there. And you can still get early bird pricing for the full weekend pass by using the code MacCast. So that's going to give you a great discount. The event is happening in July, the 21st and 22nd to be specific, in Woodstock, Illinois. And I hope you can join me out there. So I look forward to seeing you there. And again, remember, use the code MacCast at MacStockConferenceAndExpo.com to get early bird pricing on your tickets. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. If you have feedback for me, a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, I welcome your emails and audio comments. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. I forgot to mention, I had asked you, you know, what do you want to do about the forum? Is that something you guys still want? And the results were mixed, but ultimately I decided, hey, we're going to keep the forum around for a while. There's actually a really great community of folks over there that participate. It's not a huge group, but if you need support, if you need help with your devices, you have questions, and you're between shows, you need some quick, immediate help, there is a great crew of people that are on the MacCast forum that are ready and willing to help you out. So it is a great place to go to ask your questions, to just hang out with other members of the MacCast community. So you can check that out at forum.maccast.com, and I encourage you to do so. I know it's kind of old school, but it's still a lot of fun, and we keep making enhancements and improvements to the forum software. So there's some great new features over there. You can kind of upvote on things, you can favorite things, you can follow along, you can get notifications. It is a really pretty nice system. So check that out, forum.maccast.com. And as always, if you'd like to follow me between shows, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or if you're on Google Plus, check out google.com/plus MacCast for the Google Plus community. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.